Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2018. Lecture 16, delivered on March 26, 2018. The title of this lecture is Free Cash Flow.
Today, free cash flow. Before I get to that, just a few looks at market activity. Starting off, sir, good day or bad day for the markets? Strong, good day. The question would be, why? The answer, in part, even though we have had the Fed has increased interest rates that it can control, signaling that it's going to try to squeeze down the economy. That information has already been impounded in previous days and weeks. The looming trade war, global trade war, can spook markets in the long run, but it actually makes markets euphoric in the short run. Yeah, we're going to have more domestic business because we're going to kick our competitors like China in the rear end, so that makes the markets feel good until the consequence of that comes about. But that's not going to show up for some time yet. As a matter of record, the last time we had a severe round of tariffs put into place, the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, initially, it was all great. Everyone felt good. We're finally number one again and all that. It was only later when other countries retaliated that we dropped the entire planet into a global depression. But we're not there yet. We're still feeling good about ourselves on that. Overall, the market is just feeling pretty darn frisky. As you can see, Dow up 2.75%, ditto for the S&P 500, NASDAQ had a good day. Everything is fine. Now take that in the context of the political backdrop, the chaos in Washington. It might seem, well, geez, things are really kind of difficult in Washington. I heard it was a really stormy Sunday evening. Wouldn't that cause the markets to get scared? No. The one thing, and I will apply this to another company here in a minute, it does not matter if there is criminality, corruption, lying, dog beating, cat smacking, whatever. First, if it's not caught, and then second, will it even have a consequence? In the case, there was a company that has gotten in the news for being naughty. Do you know what company that is? You don't. But it turns out that it was not only collecting private data on tens of millions of Americans, it was providing that data to a foreign company that was funneling it to the Russians to manipulate public opinion and European opinion too. So out of that, we got elections of people, we got the Brexit, we got all kinds of things because of this naughty company sneaking like some creepo behind the scenes. But you see, that doesn't matter to markets. All they want to know is it going to create more regulations? Is Congress going to get self-righteous and put the squeeze on this company? Are the company's revenue sources going to shy away from this company, step back from it? Those are the things that matter. It does not matter what a company does. All that matters is what the consequence of that is. Now, what company was it?
Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook, yeah. But now, I would be more than happy to see Mark Zuckerberg walk to a gallows, except he's got such a scrawny neck, they probably wouldn't find a rope that would work. But the bottom line is, who cares what Facebook does to your privacy? Who cares what it did to the fates of nations? All that matters is it going to affect revenue? That's what matters in business. Again, take the personal side out of it. Take your hopes and wishes out of your analysis. And now if we look at Facebook, FB, well, the year to date doesn't look like markets really give a rat's butt about what Facebook did, the media attention that it got. What matters to the markets is, will the company still be able to crank out massive amounts of revenue? Will the company cause greater federal regulation of social media and privacy? And the markets right now just don't see it as much of an issue. It's going to be a little bit of a whine and fuss, but not really much that's going to affect the fate of Facebook as a company and and its stock. If you look at Facebook, it closed up a little bit, not as much as the market, at 160.06. Look at that target. 1 year estimate is 221.74. That's a hellaciously high capital gain on that stock projected. So apparently, your privacy, your nation, the global stability isn't that important to a market. Markets will survive whether nations do or not, and whether people are good people or bad people. And that's an unfortunate thing from a moral perspective and an ethical perspective, but that's the reality of how it works, most unfortunately, for some people. Okay. I'm going to show you something now. I'm going to do a little trick. This is a simulation, okay? I think Facebook was improper in what it did, but more importantly, I think it is going to come out relatively quickly that Facebook is losing advertisers and that it is going to lose a lot of its users to more interesting, more worthwhile platforms for social media content and interaction. So what I'm going to do is, first of all, I am interested in the short interest sitting on Facebook right now. Now, if you look at the short interest, it is sitting at a very modest level. It rose 3% from yesterday, but I mean the percent of float is still only 1.11% of the security. And the days to cover is only 1.3. Compare that with Netflix. Which is sitting at almost 5% of the float, and the days to cover is 2.4. Still not dramatic, but a little bit troublesome, maybe a little bit. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a position right now, a short position in Facebook. And let's see what happens. And I'm going to show you a real one. Facebook. Facebook right now is at 160.09, was it? Shoot. Seriously. 160.06. Okay, so what I'll do, and we'll look at this in the next class. Okay. I'm going to tell the broker short 1,000 FB at market cover at 150 or better. Now, when I say at market, just buy it whatever the price is that's sitting there. Now, when I say 150 or better, 150 or lower. In other words, if it ticks from 150.05 to 149.96, take the 149.96. Okay? So what this means is if I am right, and Facebook is going to take a serious drop short term, I will borrow 1,000 shares of Facebook at, let's say that they actually get it at 160.06. And then I will sell those shares that I've borrowed. And that will put into my bank account 1,000,000. That goes into my account immediately. I borrowed the 1,000 shares and I sell them right away, instantly. Now, let's see. Let's say on Friday, FB ticks down right to my cover. So at this point, I will buy 1,000,000 shares, which will mean that I will pay out $150,000. And I've closed the position. It's over. So let's see what I got. I got $10,060. And then I'll pay my commission and just walk away from it. If Facebook goes down, as I in my simulation am predicting it will. This is a little tiny bit simplified, and remember, your commission is going to eat into it. So you have to take serious positions or you have to bet serious drops in order to overcome that cost of playing this. You also can't do this unless you have money with this brokerage house. That's why when you get a bunch of money and you decide I'm going to be an investor, you don't put all of your money into stupid stocks and bonds. You have to keep some in your cash position. That way, the brokerage house is comfortable with giving you at least limited permission to do some things like shorts and writing options. Now, in this class, I'm not supposed to teach you about options, which is another way that you investors can do things. Of course, since they told me I can't teach that, I'm going to teach you. The options give you more flexibility in some situations than buying, selling, or shorting. Also, options responsibly, you can use options to hedge your positions. So that, in other words, you can use options to prevent yourself from having too much of a win or too much of a loss. You can also use options. If you don't want to sell a stock, you can use an option to lock in a capital gain without getting rid of the stock itself. And there are other derivatives too, like futures contracts, which we now are using very efficiently to help real-life businesses keep volatility from entering into their cash flows. Volatility in things that they can't control, that they don't want to take risks in. So, for example, a farmer, we can do things for farmers now, like set them up with futures contracts so that if corn prices go down, they lose on the corn, but they win on the futures contract. If corn goes up, they lose on they win on the corn, but they lose on the futures contract. We can help farmers stabilize cash flow. We can do it for companies that use lots of gasoline to protect them from volatility of fuel prices. So options have a very large, important position in modern financial risk management. They also are, for investors, a way to protect some of your winnings, shield yourself from massive losses, and also, short selling is a short-term thing. You're not going to hang this. I mean, after a week or so, I'm going to say FTS on Facebook if it goes up, keeps going up. I was wrong. And again, I wouldn't have taken this position anyway because I don't see any reason why the markets are going to spank Mark Zuckerberg and his company. Well, the media will. There will be outrage. There will be anger, and the Congress will pull him in and make him testify. But at the end of the day, they're not going to do a thing because, first of all, they don't understand social media. Second of all, way too many of them are beholden to what Facebook did for them with Cambridge Analytica and the Russians. So I'm not worried about that. But there are other companies. So, for example, let me go back here. Netflix, NFLX. Try that again, NFLX. What the hell? Oh, for God's sake. You heard that, right? That wasn't just me having some PTSD fly. Okay. What the hell? Where is that damn thing? Oh, shut up. Shut up. Stop. God. There was a really unfortunate thing. There was an ad that was way inappropriate here last year, and I actually almost turned off the computer. I couldn't find how to stop it. Okay. Let's look at Netflix real quick, and I'll come back to this in a little bit here. But Netflix, okay, right now Netflix is sitting at 320.35. Strong up day. Notice how its beta is also much higher than 1.0. And it did better today than even the market as a whole. Now, some days it will do a lot better. Some days it'll do a little better. Some days it might even do bad when the market does good. But overall, the volatility of Netflix in a well-diversified portfolio is about half again as much as the market portfolio itself. So we would expect this one to whip around pretty hard, even in a nice portfolio. Now, here's the interesting thing. Look at the price of Netflix right now, $320.35. Look at the projection out 1 year, $280.90. In other words, the projection is that Netflix is going to get creamed over the next year. It's going to be punished hard. And that might, what the heck is this? that might give some indication as to why the short interest is so high. Not sure, but it didn't increase any from yesterday. But a short interest of almost 5% of the outstanding stock, that's a little bit interesting to me. Okay? So you want to keep that in mind when you're doing this kind of analysis. Look at projections. Also look at short interest, because short interest can tell us a lot about what the market... Okay, Netflix is going to be, there, it looks to me, going back here. See how Netflix had a really, really strong day? This is one where you've got a very serious division of judgment. You've got bulls who are going to fight to keep this thing going up. You've got bears who are going to short the hell out of this stock. So let's see who wins. Is Netflix really going in for a serious beating over the next year? Kind of hard to say. What would be the first thing that you would be concerned about with a Netflix as far as the prospects of the company? Talk to me. What would you say? Do you Netflix and chill?
Oh, yeah.
Good. I just wanted to make sure. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I do too, but that's because I have no friends. Talk to me. Anything?
What was the original question again?
I don't know. I would just think about what I'm going to watch tonight. You know, there's the Father Brown murder mysteries, but I watched all of those. And Longmire, I mean, they canceled the series, so that's over. Oh, well, anyway. What do you say? Anything? Anything that would give you an indication that this company is going to take a serious beating over the next year? Yeah, go.
From what I've heard about Netflix in the news, they're trying to switch from showing other people's shows to doing mostly just original content. And
so now, how are they doing with that so far, though?
The original content.
Yeah, it's...
The
question, though, is can they continue to pull that, those miracles?
Pull it up as rapidly as people binge watch it.
Yeah, go ahead. Ah, Disney, that damn mouse and his competitive rodent lifestyle. The competition is getting rather serious. And how can they get original content, which is connects with what are they going to do when Disney says no more and possibly a few other providers start to say no more? They will have to rely more and more on original content, and they have done some pretty awesome things. What have they done that was a big hit, a big score? Can you think of anything? Yeah? Absolutely. But what have they done since then that got the media whirl that Stranger Things did? I mean, that's the problem is, it's one thing to do a trick once. It's another thing to keep a string of those kinds of tricks going. And, I mean, there are some that show up, but there's nothing that's really... Whoa, that's just awesome, and a whole bunch of people watch a bunch of torpy kids be weird with alien things and dark worlds upside down. That's hard to do more than once. Believe me, I thought it would work twice with Jack Daniels. It didn't. Anyway, this is what we begin to think about. Is this really Netflix a winner, or does this projection really tell us that there is a troubled water ahead for the company? Now, taking this on to the next aspect is how do we in finance look at companies? We don't buy accounting numbers. We use them, but we know that they are not the whole story. To give you a good example, Well, I'll give you one good example right here. my company that I own is profitable. Bottom line, there is a positive number. And that just makes me all happy. My company is dying. It's nearly gone. If I can't pull it or turn around by the end of the year, it's over. Can't do it. And it's not, well, how can you have a profitable company and still have the company dying? Well, how could Caterpillar have had a profitable company for so many years, and yet it was dropping in the price of the stock, was at best languishing for years, and the company just was not going anywhere? How could things like that happen? How can you have companies that are profitable on the accounting statements filed with the SEC or filed with the IRS or whatever, and yet these companies are suffering and struggling to survive from day to day, or month to month, or year to year? It has to do with what we in finance consider to be relevant instead of earnings, profit, whatever you want to call it. What we care about in finance is what's called free cash flow. You've seen me actually say this in problems. The cash flow from this project is projected to be, and I give you a table. I don't say the profit from this. We talk about incremental cash flow. So we look at each project on its own. What are the increments or decrements in cash flow caused by this project on its own? And then that's what we use for our net present value and all that, those calculations. Now, the first thing that I want to bring up, a couple of side formulas. First of all, net working capital. Net working capital is current assets minus current liabilities. Now, that really doesn't matter as well. It does matter to us, but not for free cash flow. What matters to us in terms of free cash flow are the changes, the period over period, year over year, whatever you want to call it, change the delta in net working capital. That change in net working capital would be the net working capital in the current period minus the net working capital in the previous period. NWC sub T minus NWC sub T minus 1. Here's the thing. As my current assets swell, that drains cash flow. That has been the problem with my company. The biggest, one of the biggest, well, there are two problems, was that I was increasing the distance between my current assets and my current liabilities. In other words, I had a lot of accounts receivable. I had a lot of inventory. I had all those nice things. And on my liabilities, I was holding true. But every time I do something that increases my net working capital, the distance between current assets and current liabilities, that is bleeding me of cash flow because it's going into things that are not liquid, like money in my pocket, for God's sake. So net working capital, it's not that if this is positive, okay, if delta NWC is positive, it's a drain on cash flow, on free cash flow. If it's negative, it is a help to free cash flow. In other words, if someone pays an account receivable, that would decrease my net working capital because current assets would go down. But, you know, that, there's the problem though, okay? I get more money in that way. But at the same time, there's some other problems with that. But anyway, okay. Now, the first thing that we have to do, and I'm going to show you a real problem, and it will be worse than anything you would possibly see in the assessments. I'm always sorry I do this, because I grab a company that I haven't done, and I say, all right, let's calculate the total free cash flow. And then I'm sitting there wondering why the hell I did that on something as complicated as an actual company without an Excel spreadsheet. But anyway, look. Okay. The first thing we have to do for FCF, it's going to equal, first things first, your revenue minus your costs. Now, here I'm going to be a little different from the book to the extent that maybe I shouldn't be. Because on actual financial statements, usually depreciation is actually right there in the cost. But I'll put it separately like the book does. But just recognize in the real financial statements, you'll see depreciation is just one of the costs in the list. Okay, so now I'm going to take revenue minus cost minus depreciation. I'm going to take that amount, that total, times 1 minus the tax rate of the company. In other words, you're going to pay tax on this net amount. That's your net, okay? Now, in here, I need to make sure that you know that you should put in the interest expense as well into the costs, okay? Now, the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to add back all of the depreciation because that really wasn't a cost. That was just a number on a financial statement. I didn't write a check to depreciation. I didn't have depreciation come in and say, yo, you owe us money. There's no such thing as depreciation in reality. There is the next one. Minus your capital expenditures for the year. In other words, I buy a new piece of equipment. It's going to cost me about $4,800. And I'm telling you an actual one. Yeah?
Are those two different depreciations?
No, they're the same one.
So you only subtracted and then added?
No, I did not. I subtracted it as part of my overall cost that are on the accounting statements, and then I say, take the after-tax amount of that. In other words, this right here is a tax shield. Minus depreciation times minus tau, the tax rate, creates plus depreciation times the tax rate. That's a tax shield. It's money I don't have to pay to Uncle Sam. Where was it? Okay, now, $4,800. Now, I am allowed under the accounting rules and tax rules to take $1,000 of that as depreciation. I have to spread it out over a period of years, over 7 years about. It's about $1,000. I didn't spend $1,000. I spent $4,800. So I've got, for real actual cash flow purposes, I've got to subtract the whole capital expenditure amount. But in terms of looking at it from a tax perspective, this is how much I get to keep after paying taxes. And then I have to add the depreciation back in because it wasn't real. In other words, this is just to calculate my after-tax amount of money, including something that didn't actually happen. But for tax purposes, I get a shield on it. And then once I've looked at that shield and all that, what that did to help me, then I have to add the depreciation back in and take out the real amount that I blew. So in the practical sense, in my structure of my company, I'm going to have a minus 1,000 here. I'm going to have probably about 18,000 minus 7,000, that's 11, minus 1,000, that's a 10,000, times my marginal tax bracket of 15%, times 0.85 that I get to keep of that. And then I have to add that 1,000 back in because that didn't actually happen. But over here, I have to take away that $4,800 that actually did happen. That's why free cash flow is not an accounting phenomenon. It's a real thing. So now, oh, and one more. Minus the delta NWC, the change in net working capital. Because like I said, if that's a positive number, if I've increased the distance between my current assets and my current liabilities, that bled cash free cash flow. If I decrease it, it will add to my free cash flow. That doesn't mean you always want to decrease your net working capital. That's not a good idea at all because you've got to have liquidity. But there's a balance there. The problem, I mean, you know, this you can put this into an Excel spreadsheet. It's and the ones your the problems you'll see in the assessments are not hard at all. What happens in real life is just more than anything else the pain in the butt of did my mouse just die? Is there a signal? Seriously? Is there some reason why this sucks? Oh, the computer froze. Was it that stupid ad that did that? No, seriously, noobs, that's not good. Wait, I know how to do this. Didn't work. Okay. And I can't even. Oh, this is a hard crash. Okay. Oh, this is really serious. I'm holding down the off button and this computer is, oh, whew. Okay. Now, count to 20, let the capacitors bleed, and then bring it back on and watch it just fuss. Windows detected a shutdown of your computer and all that. Okay, while that's going on, the problem is that when you look at the actual financial statements of companies, a couple of things you'll notice. First of all, different companies have different names for the same things. And also, interestingly enough, I ran into a problem in the last class. I pulled up a company that didn't list depreciation in the income statement. Now, do you remember your income statement? You have your different costs, your selling and general administrative minus depreciation. Well, Netflix's financial statements, the income statement, didn't mention the depreciation. I had to go prowling around. I finally found it in the statement of cash flows. Now watch this computer. I have a cow about that, what I just did. So that can be a problem. So if you don't see depreciation on the front sheet, on the income statement, go to the statement of cash flows. What was really weird, and I'll show you this really quick here, Netflix had a staggering amount of amortization. Its depreciation was actually fairly modest. But amortization, which is basically depreciation of intellectual property, was some number that was almost incomprehensibly large. And I couldn't figure out what in the heck that was. And finally, one of the more astute students in the class caught, she said, wouldn't that be they buy all of this content and the copyrights are actually, you know, intangible property, and they're just depreciating them out really rapidly. That's better than anything I could have thought of. And right now, the computer is just looking at me pig face blank. Well, at least I have my mouse back. I have a black screen. Okay. Let me get this back. Bear with me 1 minute. Apology for that. Why am I apologizing for Bill Gates? Bill Gates doesn't need my apology. Okay. It's grinding here. Yeah, it's all upset. But anyway, okay. So that was a little bit of an eye catcher with Netflix. But showing you another company, one that's a little bit more, not quite as odd as Netflix. I'm going to give a stab, and I always try to do this with a company I haven't done, so you can see me flopping around, struggling with the numbers, so that you don't feel like you just don't understand it if you're struggling with it. So the bottom line here is I'm going to show you. I'm kind of torn between Caterpillar and FedEx. Yeah, let me see. Oh. No, I don't want, for the love of God. It's like skiing behind a rowboat. I immediately regret staying alive long enough to see computers. Okay. Okay. Whoa, look at that. It actually saved all of those, and I don't need them. Okay, so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go sec.gov. And I'm going to go to the filings. And I'm doing this partly so you don't forget how this works. You go to sec.gov, filings, company filings, search. And what I'm going to do, I think maybe I'll just pull up. I'm not going to touch NFX LX again. That was way too much like work. Maybe I can't remember FedEx's symbol. FedEx, there it is. Now, they've released a 10Q. What I'll do is I'll go down here. They've released a couple of, oh, this company's near its 10K. Real quick, those are the quarterlies. The SC13Gs are the, they give away shares to insiders or something of that nature. So it's worth it for you to keep an eye on these to see, okay, how much candy are they giving to their executives? Freebies. They're already giving them stupidly, insanely high salaries relative to the global pay for executives. And then they give all of this extra bonus in terms of stock. You keep an eye on this so that you know how much they're watering down your positions by the candy that they're giving to their bigwigs. The 8Ks, remember, are disclosures of non-recurring events. So sometimes they're not really anything interesting, but I'm just kind of curious about the 8K here, what happened with CAT, or FedEx, rather. Oh, it's an underwriting agreement, so it's nothing that's too interesting. So I think I'm going to back up here. And let me try CAT. Their 10K is so old, it's a little bit concerning. Okay, now, they've just had a 10K file, so this will be fairly decent. Okay, so now, going to the financial statements, results of operations. Now, looking here, if you look, the problem is that they're not showing depreciation. And this is actually something I've been running into more lately. They're not showing it as a separate line. I need it to calculate free cash flow. Now, what probably is the case is that it is embedded here in one of these other costs. I don't see it. Don't see it at all. So what I would do is, if I don't see the depreciation here, the next place you go is a statement of cash flows. And here, depreciation and amortization just shows right up, right away. Now the question is, is Caterpillar putting that number, 2877, somewhere here in this cost list of the income statement? What do you think? Are they actually putting it in there, or is that not even in there? It's obviously got to be being used to calculate the taxes, but I don't see it being shown anywhere in here whatsoever. So it's your call. Is it in there or not? In other words, do I have to worry about this in that revenue minus cost minus depreciation? Should I just assume that just adding up those costs, depreciation is in there somewhere? Or should I put it as a separate thing from the statement of cash flows? My call is that they're not putting it in there. They're using it in the they're subtracting it before they calculate their taxes. But it doesn't look to me like it's in there someplace. So what I would do is I would say, okay, total sales and revenue, 46,462. Is that 45,462? 45,462. Minus the cost. Now, what I would do here is I would add up those costs that I'm seeing, and I'm going to pull up calculator, and I'm going to just look over here, and I'm going to say, okay, my cost of goods sold, 31,049. Selling in general, 51.77. See, I was just doing that to make sure you were watching what I was doing. That's good. You caught it. Minus 51.77. Okay, minus the R&D expenses. Minus 1905. Minus interest expense on financial products, 646. Now minus, I'm going to do one more here. I forgot the other. 2277 minus 2279. Do you happen to recall what that depreciation number was? That wasn't it, was it? Maybe it was. Let me look real quick here. I'm going to go back over to the statement of cash flows, just out of curiosity, to see if they're calling that other, 2877. It's not. Okay. But I do want, did I put in the interest? Okay, now, I got to put in the interest expense because that's an expense too that protects you from taxes. Okay, and that's a real expense. Okay, so minus, and then my interest expense, 531. Wait, I was subtracting those and I should have been adding them. Yep. Just makes my... Huh? You know what? I try to do things the way that is beneficial. It's like, you know, I make a healthy meal from scratch. I make the macaroni and cheese with the extra, you know, with I hand roll out the macaroni and cheese, and then I go out and I milk the cow. And I make the cheese, and I take the breadcrumbs, and I make bread, and I wait for 3 days for it to get moldy, and then I roll it up, and I make that, and you say, why couldn't you make it out of the Kraft box? I know. Yes, I can do it that way, but... Okay, total operating costs, 41,056. 41,056. But I want to also add that interest expense in here, 531 equals 41,587. Minus that depreciation, 2877. They're barely going to come out with a profit here. Do you see that before? Huh. Interestingly. Interesting. Now, I'm going to assume, and I might be wrong about this, Caterpillar is such a large company, it's probably in the 35% marginal tax bracket. So I'm going to say it's times 1 minus 0.35. Then I'm going to add back in that 2877. Now, here's something that's going to be interesting. How can I tell capital expenditures? There's one way that's kind of a dirty trick, and it's not probably, it's not exactly right. But if I go over here to my consolidated balance sheet, and where is... There it is. Look here. If I look at the problem is the capital expenditures. What I would want to do for capital expenditures is see how these numbers changed from year to year. And in this case, it's not going to be so easy. So I might want to look over here at the statement of cash flows. Capital expenditures. That's probably going to be what I want to use. Capital expenditures. Right there. 898 was their net capital expenditures. But they have expenditures for this stuff too. So I'd probably want to look at the net cash provided by the investing activities at the bottom. I could nitpick and cut out some of these, but it's not going to, the ones that I would cut out would probably, in this case, definitely, I was looking through it real quick, it's not going to be worth my while. So my net capital expenditures were $994. And that came from the statement of cash flows, investing activities. Now, the last thing that I'm going to do is I've got to get net working capital. Okay, first of all, and we're going to go up here to the balance sheets. And I keep doing that wrong. There. No. That's. Why do I keep missing it? I'm just going to keep guessing until I find the balance sheet, okay? Consolidated financial, because there. Okay, now, the net working capital for Caterpillar, 2017, 2016. current assets, current liabilities. Okay? Net working capital. I have to do both of them. 2017, my current assets, 36,244. I'm going to write these numbers down. 36,244. For 2016, 31,967. 31,967. Current liabilities, 26,931 for 2017, 26,931. And then for the current liabilities for 2016, 26,132. So my net working capital in 2016 was 7 minus 2, 5, 3, 8. 31 minus 26 was, for 2016, net working capital was 58.35, and do watch me, my arithmetic, I so suck at math. 1, 12 minus 9 is 3, 5 minus 6, 9. Holy cow. Do you see the change in net working capital? Is that right? Did I do those right? Do you see what, do you see why that kind of surprised me? Look at their change. The change in net working capital, delta net working capital, would be 9,313 minus 5,835. So, 9,313 minus 5,835 equals, ooh, their working cap, net working capital. That was a, that was, that's a pretty healthy bleed on cash flow. 3,478 minus 3,478. Okay, there you go. Now I can find free cash flow for 2017. Pounding that out. 4,5. I can't even read them up from here.
4,62.
Read it to me. Okay, hang on here. Open. Whoops. Let me clear. Seriously. Okay, now let me clear it. Okay, now open the parentheses. What was it?
4,5,462.
4,5,462. Minus. 41587 minus 2877. Close the parentheses times point 0.65 it would come out to be. Plus the 2877 minus capital expenditures 994 minus networking capital, boy, that networking capital was a bleed. 3,478. Holy! Look at that. Well, butter my biscuits and call me delicious. Look at that. Now, let's look at what the accounting said. Profit, $754 million. That's the accounting. Finance, negative $946.3 million cash flow. So in other words, this is a classic example, a classic of the difference between what the accounting numbers will tell you and what the real life actual dollars are telling you about this company's performance last year. This company was profitable according to the financial statements. This company is like a ginormous example of my own company. On paper, it looks great. But what I would want to do, and don't get me wrong, what you really have to do is look at this situation over a period of several years. Is this something that was just a one-trick pony? It just had a bad cash flow year? Or are they bleeding cash year over year? My guess, they knew that this was happening. Several years back, they told my students in a discussion panel, some of the treasury people said, we know our profit is good, but we didn't know why we were sick until there was this feeling that the company wasn't doing well. And it was because we weren't focusing on cash flow. Several years back, they turned over and stopped worrying about profitability and started worrying about cash flow. Clearly, they understand that there's a problem, but also quite clearly, the problem is still there. It's sort of like 5 years ago, you were walking down the street and an axe killer put an axe through your head. You've been walking around ever since. Yeah, there's a problem. I got headaches. But you haven't pulled the axe out yet because it is very difficult to turn around the ways that you do things. In this case, essentially, the only way they're going to crawl out of this, for one thing, net working capital is that looks like that was the biggest problem they had. They increased their liquidity considerably for some reason. Now, is this something that they're going to keep doing? Why did they do this? Was there something that was really important? But when I see that so much cash flow has disappeared into the rabbit hole of current assets over current liabilities, my question is, why? What are you putting away? So I go back up here very quickly, and I want to see one last thing. Oops. Seriously, is that hard for me to find? Is it that hard? There. Look at that. What do you see? Their cash and short-term investments went up by That's not a billion, is it? Is that a billion? Wait, in millions. So if they went up by 1,000, say it.
8 billion.
That's from 7 billion to 8 billion. Their cash and marketable securities went up by $1 billion. The receivables went up by almost 2 billion. There's where the blood is, and their inventories shot up $2 billion. And now I look down here at their current liabilities, and I am looking at, they bled off financial products, accounts payable, they increased the amount that they're owing, so that saved cash. There's $2 billion back, $1.8 billion back there. Their accrued wages, they've increased those. That would increase their cash flow by not paying workers as in a timely manner. It's clearly that they're not keeping their current liabilities up. They increased their cash by $1 billion, their receivables by close to $2 billion. I mean, that's where this is happening. Their liabilities, current liabilities, aren't going up nearly as fast as their current assets. They're becoming a much more liquid company. But the question is, why would an industrial company want to be more liquid to the tune of bleeding their free cash flow down to negative almost $1 billion in negative cash, free cash flow? Now, I don't give investment advice. But I'm going to look here real quick, one last time. My call, let's put it this way, my call would be considerably different from the markets on this, whoever this analyst is who projected that. The analyst is projecting $30 increase on $150 stock. That's about a 20% capital gain. I just don't see that with that negative cash flow. If they keep going like that, this company is going to be in serious trouble over the next couple of years. And I would recommend that when you go there, see how many jobs they have. See how much they're hiring. And that'll tell you right up front, does this company understand what's going on and it's pulling back its hiring? Or is it just still hiring like there's no tomorrow? That's all I have for you today. I thank you.